Galilee is called Galilee of the Nations. And it's because it was all mixed and they were all screwed up, just sort of like us. They only had one rabbi in the whole history of the Talmud that came from Galilee, and it was Rabbi Jose. That's the truth.
Is that with a J or an A?
J. And it's Josie, isn't it? But it's more fun to say Jose. But there was a feeling of expectancy in the land because of all of the signs and all of the scriptures pointed toward Messiah. During the time of Christ, there were 400 people. During the years around Christ, there were 400 people that came that were claiming to be Messiah. And it was because, and Messiah isn't religious. Get rid of religious from your thinking. Messiah means that which will complete your fondest and deepest hopes and desires. Forget religion. Whatever it is, that gut-level feeling in part of you that you desire, that you haven't had, that hasn't been fulfilled in you, Messiah is the fulfillment of that. It's a concept. It's much more than something that's religious. And about this time of the year, all of the crops are in, the labor is finished, and people are getting ready to go to Jerusalem. And every time they go, especially now at this period, there's a feeling of incredible expectancy. And that's the thing that needs to be paramount in your mind. And somehow you intuit that this expectancy doesn't have anything to do with you. You don't have to deserve it. You don't even have to understand it. And all throughout, we're going to study the things that happened on the Feast of Rosh Hashanah. Rosh Hashanah, as you well know, is the point in which Christ was born. And we're going to study exactly what the priests were doing while Christ was being born. And it's kind of wild. We're going to study what the Zohar... We got the Zohar, so now we can be Zohar people. But the Zohar talks about an incredible thing in Rosh Hashanah that I'll billboard a little bit. So.
Did they sing the song?
They sang Psalm 47. The reason they sang Psalm 47 is that's the point. You remember that the walls of Jericho fell down on Rosh Hashanah, the walls of separation. Walls of
defense.
The walls that have kept you as this isolated island in the sea. You don't need to be isolated. You don't need to be in an isolated island any longer. You don't need to live the lie of isolation any longer. But anyway, Psalm 47 was read 7 times. Now, even more so, all of the offerings were given in Rosh Hashanah. Now, we've studied the trespass offering. You've started to apprehend the sin offering. And the thing that's set before you in the next one is the peace offering, and that's the offering in which, by your partaking of it, you get delivered from cause and effect. But everything is apprehension. Some of you have been feeling nervous and unsettled. Primarily, I think, it may be my fault, but that's all right, too. It's because you've been anchored to the wrong thing. So I want you to sense this. We're leaving Galilee. We're going towards Jerusalem. And they sang the Psalms of Ascent, which we'll study probably Tuesday night. And now, they sing this song because it's something that is, they sense. It's something they're moving towards. It's a certainty. Okay? It's the revelation of Christ in you. in its all its completion.
Our loving kindness is better than life. My loving kindness is better than life. My lips shall praise thee, thus will I bless thee. I will lift up my hands in thy name.
Bring things back into focus. What we believe. We believe it's finished. What is it? Everything. We believe that the only purpose of linear time or the continuation of time in your life is to test that finishedness. So that which is true in spirit becomes true first in mind and then in body. And it's a process. God designed it that way. He designed it so that everything in the world would come against the finishedness of your life. The main thing that comes against your finishedness is your mind. And so until you figure out that your mind and your sensory observations are a lie, you'll never believe it's finished. You'll run around with a blanket over your head. We also believe that the events that take place in your life that you give importance to or that take place in time that people, the human race, give importance to, are pseudo-events. They're non-events. Cowboy games. Birthdays. Except my birthday. You know, God's celebrating my birthday. This is kind of neat this year. He's giving me an eclipse of the sun for my birthday.
But you're the only one that'll be able to see.
What?
You're the only one that'll be able to see.
I mean, you guys don't get an eclipse of the sun for your birthday.
I got a new calculator.
Does that compare to an eclipse?
That last
solar power.
Well, you made your calculator all work for my birthday.
Paper, scissors.
That's great.
But the only events that have any meaning in time are the events that are connected with the ancient Jewish festivals. The word festival in Hebrew means appointed time. I mean, just think of all the events in life that man has made up. Mother's Day, Father's Day, made up by the commercial establishments.
Elections.
Elections. Grandmother's Day. I don't want to, that's enough, that's enough.
Bible study teacher's day.
Right. But everything in life is made up of a series of pseudo-events to give your life meaning. You work during the week, you look forward to the weekend. Therefore, you can't give yourself to the now. You're always looking to a pseudo-event to give your life meaning. You invent some idea or event in your mind, and you're going to go to it. Therefore, your mind can be directed towards that thing which is coming rather than now. And therefore, you're never living in now. You're living in some place in the future, and it's a lie because there is no future at this point. So you're never living. And so God divined and designed, he divined him too, the events that were to have meaning in time. And he called them the festivals, the feast days. Why?
No, I was just thinking that we look forward to those appointed times, but it's also in knowledge that it's happening now.
That's right.
So that it's not, you know.
Right.
Are they just, they're happening all the time outside of time?
They're all finished outside of time.
Yeah, and so it's just kind of a break in.
Right. The reason we celebrate the feasts is so that we can see experientially what is true all the time. Okay? So now these feasts are many and several.
Several and many.
Several and many. Numerous.
They
bunches.
Now and again.
Now and again they happen. Every once in a while.
Frequently.
Okay. We're not doing well here.
You asked for that one.
Huh?
I said you asked for that one.
You didn't have to give it any... You didn't... The first feast is the feast, the first one that's not celebrated in the Torah, it's celebrated by Christ, is the feast of Hanukkah. And it happens around the 25th of December, and it's the day the Holy Spirit came upon Mary and conceived the child, Christ. Now, what does that have to do with you? Well, in truth, it becomes the day in which you say that God is a viable possibility, independent of your own idolatry. Understand?
Independent of your own idolatry?
Right. A lot of people say God's a viable possibility if he meets their idol. That doesn't mean anything. That's just worshiping Baal. When you say, God, I'm yours, no matter what the condition, no matter what the cost, no matter what the outcome, then God is a viable possibility in your life. Otherwise, he's just somebody up there. Maybe.
Right.
Okay, that's your celebration of Hanukkah, the feast of dedication, because you've dedicated your life without condition. All the things you've done, no matter how many times you've taken that walk down that good old aisle while whatever that song is they play was playing. Yeah. There's certain of you that have walked down that aisle so many times. I won't name any names, but... But you walk down that aisle just simply making God an overlay on your cultural identity. That doesn't count. When you say, Father, I'm yours without condition, that's Rosh, that's Hanukkah. We celebrated, that was like a few months ago. 9 months ago.
It seems like you said to me before that you're his, whether you like it or not.
Well, you're right. But it's whether you know it or not is important. God is interested in the transformation of your mind. The warfare is always here. So it's the agreement. Confession just means you speak the same thing God speaks. You see the same thing God sees. I mean, everything's God's anyway, but you have to know it. That's why you're born. If you didn't have to know it, then you just... Okay, that's Hanukkah. We're not talking about Hanukkah. The second thing that happens is something that is brought forth, something that is conceived, something that is sown, is brought forth. And that's the birth. And it's the birth of the new creation within you. And that's the birth of Christ in the world happened on the feast of Rosh Hashanah. So now he's completed two feasts. He's completed the feast of Hanukkah, or the feast of dedication. It's completed in history and completed outside of time. Now it needs to be completed in you. Now, on Rosh Hashanah, it's the revelation. He's my life. It's no longer I that live, but Christ that liveth in me.
I don't see the difference.
Well, one is just hidden somewhere down there. He's a viable possibility. Then it breaks through in your consciousness. I'm history. He's there. It's the same thing as, there's no difference. Is there any difference between that hunk of protoplasm that used to be inside of Darlene, now it's outside of Darlene? What's the difference? Just pick on Darlene now. What? And all kids are ugly. Let's get that straight.
Yeah.
All kids are uglier and they get uglier as time goes on. No. So the feast of Christ being made manifest to the senses is celebrated on the feast of Rosh Hashanah. It's the time in which Christ, the Word, was made flesh in the world, and in you it's the celebration of the time that Christ is made flesh in your earthen vessel. Somehow, there's no longer separation. There's union. Because you're separate from that which you formerly called mother. You understand what I'm saying? Well, you're totally... You call no man on earth father, and you call no woman on earth mother. That's the issue of being seen at Rosh Hashanah. It's a new creation, a new birth, a new thing that's come forth. Now, all kinds of things happened on Rosh Hashanah. Tradition has it that it's the time that Moses got the second set of tablets. The first ones were broken, and the second ones came into being.
That's
me.
Don't worry about it.
What are they saying?
Huh? Now, there was 11 commandments on the first one.
Tell them what the 11th one was.
The 11th commandment was... No. The 11th commandment was, thou shalt not put a Q-tip in your ear.
Just put it on the outside.
No, it was Father Garducci or somebody. Guido. Okay, now it's time in your life that you fully appropriated what the Feast of Rosh Hashanah means. Now, to appropriate something, to apprehend it, means that it leaves... Some of you may have never heard this stuff before. It doesn't matter. You can appropriate it instantly. Some of you have heard it for 10 years and never appropriated it. Why? Because it's only been in your head. Yeah, it's because you're stupid.
Don't encourage him to escape.
Yeah, we're making up for last Sunday. Out of control.
What?
We're making up for last Sunday.
What happened last Sunday?
We didn't take the afternoon, remember?
Always remember that Sunday is a Sunday we didn't take the
afternoon. There's still time to fuck up.
What else happened on Rosh Hashanah?
See what happens when there's a little liberty?
Yeah.
We go back to the original. The first thing that happened in Rosh Hashanah is the earth was created.
Don't go back.
A fascinating thing that happened in Rosh Hashanah is that's the time in which the nation of Israel, when they were losing the battle to the Amalekites, looked at the brass, the serpent, and lived, and were healed. And as they looked away, they were dead.
They were bitten by the snakes.
What? No. We'll read it. Don't worry about it. It's Exodus 17 for those. But one of the most interesting things that the Talmud says happened in Rosh Hashanah is Jezreel was born.
What else happened on Rosh Hashanah?
Jezreel, for those in the advanced group already know what Jezreel is. Jezreel is a Hebrew word that means hidden of God. And it was when God told Hosea to marry a whore. And her name was Gomer. And the first child of the marriage between the prophet and the whore was Jezreel. It means hidden of God. The word Gomer means filled, fed up, completed.
Fed up.
Completed. God told Hosea to marry a tired old whore.
Was it his child?
But anyway, but the whole idea of God and the mystery that's revealed in Hosea is that Gomer is the type of the bride, and it can only be, the marriage can only take place after she's done everything, and she didn't want to be a whore anymore. And so that there is no such thing as your pleasures coming from that which is forbidden. And you don't live, you get the tape from last night if you want to hear about that. Okay? Other things happened. It's the time the walls of Jericho fell down. The day the earth was created. The day that God would perform any miracle that you requested. But it's more importantly, it's the day that Christ was born, that he became flesh, and it's the day, if you believe the New Testament and believe the book of Revelation, that the earth will end. Time will be no more. The last trump. The essential ingredient of the Feast of Tabernacles, the Feast of Rosh Hashanah, is the sounding of the shofar. The shofar, which is the trumpet. At the moment, I know this with the certainty as I'm sitting here. There are three feasts that all the Jews had to be in Jerusalem for, and we've all talked about this. One was the Feast of Passover, one was the Feast of Pentecost, one was the Feast of Tabernacles. Tabernacles is the one that's coming up. Joseph and Mary were on their way to the feast. They had to stop in Bethlehem and be counted. While they were on the way to the feast, the Feast of Rosh Hashanah, Christ was born. September 29th, 2 B.C. The exact moment of his birth, 12 miles away, the priests, at that evening, the priests were sounding the shofar to announce the beginning of Rosh Hashanah. They didn't know they were announcing the beginning of their end. Rosh Hashanah occurs at the point of new moon, when you can't see the moon. The sun's reflection is hidden for a time. Okay? So he's hidden away in Bethlehem for a time. And a few days later, he's presented in the tabernacle for the rite of presenting to the Father. Well, again, its precursor is the idea of Yom Kippur, which we'll study next. Now, let me talk mystically a minute. There's all kinds of things in the Bible that say stuff like, the Lamb was slain from before the foundation of the world, that you were chosen in Him from before the foundation of the world, that you didn't have anything to do with choosing Him. He chose you, whether you like it or not. He obviously didn't use intelligence, good looks, suaviness, wit, charm. He used some other criteria to choose you and choose me. I mean, can you imagine? I mean, there's been several people who have talked about this lately, but can you imagine a more unlikely preacher than me?
No.
Think about it. It does stretch the imagination.
The limits of the imagination.
Well, I'll return it. Can I imagine him? No. But he chose you for a totally separate reason other than anything that can be perceived with the senses. He chose you because he saw in you the capacity to apprehend these feasts and their meaning. He chose in you the idea that you have failed, that you have been a failure in your relationships with people, in your relationships with the world, in your relationships with any and everything. You fail. No matter what your attempts have been to strive to be something, in the world's eyes, you are nothing. Right?
That's great.
It's true. If it wasn't true, you wouldn't be here. Nobody would be foolish enough to listen to me unless they had failed in the world.
Let's say, not many rich and noble. No, and
right. Well, yeah, I'll read that. I'll read that, just to show you it's just not me saying that.
I heard John say it, so I know it's true.
I'd like to witness it.
For you see your calling, brethren, how that not many wise men, not many after the flesh, not many mighty, not many noble are called. But God hath chosen the foolish things of the world to confound the wise. And God hath chosen the weak things of the world to confound the things which are mighty, and the base things of the world, and things which are despised hath God chosen, yea, and things which are not, to bring to nothing things that are, that no flesh should glory in his presence.
Where is that?
1 Corinthians 1. Now, the idea that God chose you. Now, you got to know something weird is going on, right? Because I want you to think a minute. Well, first of all, you've always known something weird's going on since your whole life. I mean, you've got to. But You got to know something weird is going on when, as far as you can discern, this is the only place this weird stuff is talked about. I mean, it's not, you can't buy any books about this stuff. You can't listen to it. You can't go to your favorite radio and television evangelist and listen to it. I mean, there's something different. And you're different. You've always known you're different. From the time when you were a little child, you knew something was different.
Can I add something to that? You know, family reunion stuff and everything. Talking to my mother today, right before I leave, just me and my mom are talking. She says, "How did you get to be so odd?" She said, "You were born odd, and you've gotten odder." She's like, and I've always known that. In fourth grade, I always knew that. Odd.
My whole family, not just my mother, but other people have told me that they wondered if I was really part of the family.
Yeah, I grew up with them, but it's always felt different.
Sort of like picking the staples that you
know. Yeah. Again, remember, that's a perfect example, because God was the God that created the universe, was born in a cave with a bunch of smelly animals, with manure, animal manure all over the place. What? He was not born a cowboy. But he was born, the God that could have been born in the, you know, obviously what he could have had. He chose to be born in that which was despised, the offscoring of the world. Now, you hear me talk about this for years, but you never believe it. Because you always try to prove yourself worthy after the flesh. You're not. All of us are failures.
So what do you do about it?
Let him live. Stop giving breath to our own lives.
Make decisions in your life.
You don't. You abandon yourself. Take no thought for your life. Take no thought for tomorrow. Take no thought for the things you shall eat. Take no thought for what you shall wear. You live in a perfect abandonment, only knowing one thing, who your Father is. And that's the thing that's slowly dawning on us. Now, Christ didn't know all this stuff. Christ wasn't born smart. Christ was born just like a dumb little baby. It cried and wet his pants and screamed and yelled and did all kinds of stuff. But as he read the Psalms, as he went through the feast, as he went through this, there was a slow dawning awareness on who he was, until what he was in spirit became tied to what he was in flesh and mind, and he was baptized. He went through the same stuff. He didn't know what the hell's going on. I don't know what's going on.
He must have looked at his surroundings and himself at some point. Said,
"My God,
this can't be this."
Yeah. His mother told him, probably, you know. I can hear him now. Right, Mom.
You were
conceived by the Holy Spirit. Right.
That's what they're calling it these days.
Okay, so now the essential ingredient, the essential characteristic of the Feast of Rosh Hashanah is the sounding of the shofar, the ram's horn. Now, all kinds of mystical things are attributed to this sounding. It's the time, first of all, once the purpose of the sounding of the shofar, or shofar, is to confuse Satan. Now, the confusion, as we understand, one of the essential ingredients then of the celebration, the precursor of the celebration to the Feast of Rosh Hashanah is the confusion of your mind. Because your mind is the son of Satan, the Antichrist. So if you are in a position of confusion during and prior and around the time of Shofar with your mind, rejoice. Now, if you can break through that, yeah, right. The other thing that happened is the Rams. The other thing that's celebrated, and you got to, you know, when I say these things, there's different traditions. Many, one of them was the offering of Isaac on the feast of
Rosh Hashanah. That's the condition he was in leading up to it.
That's right.
It was confusion.
Right.
Yeah. He didn't
even Isaac.
Okay. Now, but my point to you is that the purpose of the sounding of this, in the mystical sense, is to bring, according to the Zohar, is to bring the upper light into the lower light. Another way of saying it is to cause God to leave the judgment seat and go to the mercy seat. But, you see, that's what happened. And we'll see it from the Psalms. When the Word became flesh, the idea of Logos, or the Word becoming flesh, isn't unique to Christianity. It was foretold in the stars. Devika, a virgin goddess in India, had Krishna. Melita had...
Tammuz.
Tammuz. And these are definitive ancient legends. Sybil had... No, anyway, there's a whole bunch of them.
At different times throughout history?
No, these are the ancient legends. These are the stars.
This is mythology.
Mythology. All of these ancient mythology from Greece and India and China and Egypt and Babylon. Always had a virgin and a virgin bring forth a god. And the reason is because it was a perversion of the ancient story which was told in the stars, which had been told to Adam, which had been told to Seth, and it was passed down through Noah. Now we're going to read all of these on Saturday, all of these readings and a bunch of other stuff, but there's one essential ingredient of the day of Rosh Hashanah. It's happy is the people that know the sound of the trumpet, or sound the shofar. They shall walk, O Lord, in the light of thy countenance.
I was just thinking the reason they're happy is they understand the confusion. If it was blown to blow your mind, when their minds go, or they're confused, they can be happy because they know it's not
of them,
to their detriment, but to their benefit.
Yeah. Now, the other thing that is Nehemiah, this also happened on the day, and let me read it. And Nehemiah, which is the Tershra, so they read in the book of the law of God distinctly, and gave the sense, and caused them to understand the reading. That's the section of the law, when they say they read in the book of the law, or they read the law, it's the section Exodus 19 through Exodus 23, which gives the essence of the law. And Nehemiah, which is the Tirshatha, and Ezra the priest, the scribe, and the Levites that taught the people, said unto all the people, this day is holy unto the Lord your God, mourn not, weep, nor weep. For all the people wept when they heard the words of the law. Then he said unto them, go your way, eat the fat, drink the sweet, and send portions unto them for whom nothing is prepared, for this day is holy unto your Lord. Neither be ye sorry, for the joy of the Lord is your strength. So the idea is, you remember, Paul read over and over and over. He said, I write unto you that know the law. Now, what is the law? It's what's required of you. So you either have to live in that domain or live in the domain of grace. If you live in the domain of the law, then you're subject to all of the law. If you live in the domain of grace, you're free. And in essence, God transfers at the sounding of the shofar from the seat of judgment to the mercy seat. And that's the meaning of Rosh Hashanah. Now, you understand? But it doesn't do you any good unless you understand it. Now, most of you have this incredible thing where you, whenever you hear the word law with regard to Bible stuff, you think that means the Ten Commandments or something. It doesn't. It means the 613 laws of Moses, plus every law of nation of the world, plus every law of society, plus every law of science, the law of gravity, the law of cause and effect, the law of reward punishment. And if you live in that domain, you're subject to it. So really the Feast of Rosh Hashanah is for those people that no longer desire to live under that sphere any longer. They want to move from the sphere of law to the sphere of grace. Any attempt to change yourself, you're living in the sphere of law. Any attempt that where you desire that someone else would change, you're living in the sphere of law. You can't accept grace. Now, the rabbis said certain things, and then we're gonna do this, and then we're gonna do the hafkamin. These two benedictions were read at the time that the shofar was blown, or however you pronounce it, the ram's horn. And it was, remember, the ram's horn was blown so that it would bring that which is true in eternity to be true in time. It was the day Christ was born, in the Feast of Rosh Hashanah. And that which was true always in eternity is now true in time. The Word is made flesh, which doesn't do you a friggin' bit of good unless you understand where He is. Unless He's resurrected in you, none of that. This is just intellectual BS. Unless you know He's resurrected in you. How do you know? Well, you test everything else. Okay, the priest said the following: Blessed be thou, O Lord our God, King of the universe, who has sanctified us by thy word and has instructed us to hear the call of the shofar. Then he said, Blessed be thou, O Lord our God, King of the universe, who has kept us or guarded us in life, has sustained us and has privileged us to reach this time. So what I want you to do, I want you to leave here tonight with a feeling of expectancy. A feeling of confusion from the standpoint of sensory perception. A feeling of certainty that you no longer want to live in the domain of cause and effect. That you're no longer subject to the lie. Now, the last thing that's said on this day, the rabbi says this after the offerings had been given. He said, Awake from your slumbers, you who have fallen asleep in life. Reflect on your deeds. Remember your Creator. Be not of those who miss reality in pursuit of shadows, and waste their years in seeking after vain things. Forsake your thoughts and your ways. He just said that, and cried as I'm convinced, as the sound of the ram's horn was blown, 12 miles away, Christ was born in Bethlehem. Now we'll read all the readings, all the psalms, all the things that the high will duplicate in your minds, the things that the priests were doing in the temple at the time that Christ was born. And we'll understand some of these things that were said in the New Testament about the birth of Christ, because they reflect directly on these ancient traditions, on these ancient things that had been going on, that everything in life was pointed towards. Christ isn't an isolated event in history. He's not a moral option. He's not somebody you can choose. He's not somebody that you can select what you're going to believe and therefore try to live by it. He's not a teacher. He's not somebody you're supposed to try to emulate. He's a cosmic phenomenon. And he will be the way in your life as you abandon yourself and pick up your cross. What does it mean to pick up your cross? It means you accept the death penalty. And we'll do that. You'll do that when you see the requirements of the law. You'll quit living in your illusion of subjective truth. And you'll hear the law, and you'll say, oh my God, I'm in deep shit. And then you'll maybe weep and mourn for a second. And then you'll snap and say, my God, the joy of the Lord is my strength. Does everybody have a little bit of understanding about the Feast of Rosh Hashanah?
Could they hear the ram's horn, do you think, in Bethlehem as the kind of...
I mean, if it was...
12 miles?
Could be. They blew it more than once, yeah, and we'll talk about what happened when they blew it. I mean, they blew it different times for different things.
I mean, they stood right out up there on the...
Pinnacle of the temple.
Yeah,
but that was 12 miles.
Huh?
Not 12 miles.
From the temple to Bethlehem?
Yeah.
Is it 3 miles? Well, they could hear it then, for sure. I thought it was 12. Yeah.
Where did the liturgy for these feasts come from? I mean, these things that the priest read, you know, when they say, blessed art thou, or...
Well, they came from Moses, the oral traditions that were passed down from him. Now, to complete the cycle a minute, Christ was conceived by the Holy Spirit on the Feast of Rosh Hashanah. He was born by the Feast of Hanukkah. He was born in the Feast of Rosh Hashanah. He was baptized in the Feast of Yom Kippur and made an end of all offerings. He turned the water into wine and was transfigured on the Feast of Tabernacles. He was crucified on the Feast of Passover. He was buried in the Feast of Unleavened Bread. He rose from the dead on the Feast of First Fruits. And his seed or sperma was shed on all flesh on the Feast of Pentecost. And more importantly, from a spiritual standpoint, the only time the Sabbath was ever perfectly kept, it was kept in the grave. So he completed all feasts, all appointed times. And those understanding of those feasts and those things that I've just said is the only reason the human race is on the face of the earth. Every other thing that the human race does is a pseudo event. It has no meaning. The function of eating the bread and drinking the wine, if you're Catholic, you believe that this really is the body, and you're going to get Christed by eating and drinking it. If you're some other religions, there's different manifestations and meanings. Now, we believe that if you drink the bread and eat the wine, you apprehend the meaning of the offerings. Therefore, you show forth the Lord's death till he come. And therefore, you drink it worthily by not seeing yourself at all and only seeing him. Now, it's a mini Passover. It's celebrated The mini Passover is celebrated weekly. It was in the first century church, and they called them agape feasts, much like this. And the agape feasts were stopped in the Western church. They continued in the Eastern church for centuries, but they were stopped in the Western church because they forgot the injunction. They were getting too big. There was too much drunkenness. All the things that happen here. That's why I hide the wine. But the injunction is to be not drunk with wine, but filled with the Spirit. I talked to you yesterday that there is no chemical that you can partake of, whether it be marijuana, cocaine, morphine, alcohol, Valium, that your body doesn't produce in some measure. Otherwise, the receptors in your brain couldn't assimilate it. So the idea is that any kind of sensation that you can have by an external chemical is something that's already resident within you, waiting for you to hear under, that you might, it might be fulfilled. Rather than using it as an escape, it becomes a means of, it's a fulfillment of the revelation. And it says, the joy of the Lord shall be your strength. That's an incredible statement. It's not knowledge about God that'll be your strength. It's not your behavior patterns that'll be your strength. It's the joy of the Lord shall be your strength. Now, joy has to come by one single way. From a spiritual standpoint, it comes only by revelation. As you apprehend more and more of what we're about to do, there's more and more joy. If you're at rest for the Passover, if you understand your mind is truly centered, all of you, is content in whatever state you're in because you know your permanent residence is the New Jerusalem, then you take the Passover at rest. You recline, you're at rest, and all the other stuff that we know about. If you're not at rest when the afkumen is taken, then you do something strange. You take the Passover with sandals on your feet, with the staff in your hand, and your loins girded. What does that mean? It means that you're ready to depart from that which is causing you a problem. And there is some physical, tangible thing that's done by your senses so that you show forth that you're ready to leave. Now, I don't know what that is, because I don't know what's troubling you. But whatever it is, you put forth the symbolic shoes on your feet, staff in your hand, and your loins girded, and whatever the arena is that's giving you a problem, that's causing you to depart from the rest, you do that, you apprehend the body and the blood of the Lord, you fully apprehend the meaning of the sacrifices, and I guarantee you that by His stripes you are healed, by whatever He has done, your sustenance, whatever needs you have are met, and by the blood and by the wine you're made worthy. You never again have to be prove yourself worthy to you or anybody else. But it has nothing to do with you. It's everything to do with Him. All you have to do is be ready to leave if you're not at rest. Now, fortunately, I'm at rest tonight. Oh, I can just recline, huh? Whoopee. But I wasn't very much at rest last Sunday night. We didn't take the Passover because we were as a body unclean. We'd been touching the dead body. Tonight we can take it. How do I know? Well, I know. But if you personally are troubled in any arena, be ready to leave. So in the spirit, symbolically, your feet, you have sandals on your feet, you have your staff in your hand, and your loins are girded. That means you're ready to take off, to leave whatever it is that's troubling you. And as you take this, as you apprehend the body and the blood, as you apprehend the meaning of the fullness of the sacrifices, you don't even have to worry about that. You don't have to know what they mean right now. All you have to know is that they're taken care of. As you know it farther, then you can explain to somebody. Amen? Now we know the exact words that Christ said when it says he blessed the bread and gave thanks to the wine, for the wine. The reason we know the exact words is that they've been recorded for 3,500 years as a part of the Passover Seder, the Haggadah, the showing forth of the sun. And so that same evening in which he was betrayed, he took the bread and he blessed it. And he said, Blessed art thou, O Lord our God, King of the universe, who bringeth forth bread from the earth. And he's saying, who bringeth forth the bread of life from this earthen vessel. And by the stripes you are healed. There's no need that you can have that isn't met. He said, take, eat. This represents my body. This represents all of the sacrifices. This represents that by one offering he has perfected forever them that have said, Father, I'm yours. This is old matzah. It's a good thing Christ, the apprehension of it doesn't depend on the taste of it.
This is 3,500-year-old matzah.
I thought it was rather tasty, sweet, and aspires. You're getting
confused with the matzah and the manna. You see, you don't mix your metaphor.
Don't mix your manna and your matzah.
It tastes like you've got ashes of the red heifer in it.
I'm not listening to anything.
It tastes like ashes of the red heifer. He's getting his things on.
Now, again, most of you have spent an entire life trying to prove that you're worthy. You remember when you were a little kid? Well, most of you still are. You're in that same trying to position, trying to prove to you, to yourself, or to that board of elders that's sitting behind you, that you're worthy, to your father, to your mother, to your teachers, to your parent, to your associates. I'm okay, mother. Oh yeah, no you're not, and you beat the hell out of you. You don't have to do anything to be worthy. There's no conditions that you have to meet except to say, Father, I'm yours. That makes you worthy. Why? Because you apprehend this.
Along those lines, I told Denise this afternoon that you have now officially become my superego, because I keep hearing your voice inside my head say, you know, you don't have to do anything to be worthy. I'm going to be. But it's in your voice. That's
see a doctor about that.
Hearing voices is bad enough, but hearing noises.
But aren't you, I mean, isn't it, I mean, you got to know, some down deep in your gut, that you never again have to try to be worthy. You don't have to satisfy this board of elders in your head. There's another mystery taking place. It's a mystery that's manifested and revealed because of the Feast of Rosh Hashanah. And so he took the cup and he gave thanks and he said, Blessed art thou, O Lord our God, King of the universe, who createst the fruit of the vine. Now the fruit of the vine, it sounds like this, all kind of mystical stuff. But in every generation, in every ancient mythology, the fruit of the vine or the wine was always a mystical phenomena that meant something to do with the completion or something to do with why we're alive. Now, in God, we know the reason is that it represents the bride. And if you're, you know, he created the fruit of the vine, but he takes a bunch of individual grapes and he squeezes them. And an individual grape, if your identity is that individual grape, you think the whole fucking world's coming to an end. And he's squeezing that grape and he's stomping it. He's stomping on that grape. And he's getting, not only after he stomps on it, then he puts it in these little lees and the wine bubbles forth. And you think, oh my God, now I'm doing good because I'm prophesying and bubbling forth. And he comes along and whaps you. So, oh my God, this can't be right. So it's an inexorable process. First, an individual grape gets squeezed hard until its essence is put to where it was created, to the purpose it was created for.
No, if it's not squeezed enough, you know, a grape just,
you know, the falls and a lot of grapes get squashed just out on the ground, but it's not making wine. It's,
well, yeah, everybody's going to get squashed. The whole world, the universe, everybody's a grape. You know?
Some become prunes.
So anyway, if your identity is the wine, it's a wonderful experience. If your identity is the grape, God doesn't care very much for the individual grape. He wants the wine being perfected.
That's like the stomping of the grapes is the end of the world and the birth of the wine at the same time. That's why
Rosh Hashanah.
It's both things.
Rosh Hashanah.
The new beginning, it's also the end of the world.
Amen. And that's why it's the beginning of the birth of Christ, but the end of the world. As we'll see when we read in Revelation and in Thessalonians and Corinthians, that it's also the end of time. One will feel fear, one elation. That's always the case. I beg of you to be of those, among those that feel elation. This stuff isn't optional, folks. You may not believe it, but I don't care whether you believe it or not. If you don't believe it, argue with me or something. But by this, he gave thanks. And by this, you are made worthy. By this, you are freed from your past. By this, you can walk forth from here in confidence. Because the joy of the Lord is your strength. And by this, you can apprehend the sin offering. You may not fully get it in your mind yet, but you don't have to give any breath to the old, to this body of sin and death any longer. Doesn't matter. It'll be taken care of better than you could. To life. If anybody has any ties, give it to Barbara. So let's take it, big guy.